indeed a very great pleasure and privilege to introduce you this morning to the lady behind me, Eileen Scott, probably known to a great many of you. Scott is a physical phenomenon herself. It's hard to believe, I know, and when you saw her stride in here twice as fast as me, you realise that she is 90 years of age. I doubt if I'd even get to 90, never mind. Ivy is a TV star. Some of you may have seen her on Carlton Television last week when she was filmed taking a service at Croydon Church. Now, Wilfred will tell you, and he'll be on this afternoon, the quickest way to fill a church is to put Ivy on. The quickest way to empty it is to put Wilfred on. Don't tell him I said that. If you want to fill a church, you have Ivy Scott. I've seen her demonstrate here at Stansted a number of times. And it's a great privilege today for her to come along. She's been a medium for over 50 years. That's more years than some of you who are old. And she has tremendous experiences to relate to you. So rather than a demonstration, we've invited her today to come along and talk to us about some of her physical mediumship and physical phenomena experiences. I'm sure we'll have a lovely time. Will you please give our lovely Noah's Ark welcome?
I think you should wait till I've finished to see if you're talking to me. Better put the glasses on. Lovely to see you all. Many years, and I love it. Now, I must first explain. I do not know the mechanism of physical mediumship at all. I am a speaker and a demonstrator, but I have seen some wonderful things. The first person where I was introduced to what I call the lighter side of physical mediumship was Mr. Stent, who was a great worker at Croydon Church just after the war. And we went to her home. She was a very beautiful lady, rather Juno-esque. She dressed accordingly to her figure, so it looked beautiful. Lovely hair and eyes. Very, very noticeable. But her physical mediumship was transfiguration. Now, there were 20 of us in her room. They had two rooms thrown together, so there were plenty of room. And she sat on a sort of platform like this, complete light. And as we sat there quite quietly, suddenly the whole of her face altered. Now she had very well marked eyebrows and her hair was so lovely. It went completely. First of all, and no one in the room, could question it. It was so vivid. We saw, first of all, the Chinese guide who was in control of everything she did. We even saw, not in colour, but the shape of the Chinese robes that covered her own clothing. It was breathtaking, and as it was my first event, I sat there absolutely enthralled. Then we saw an Arab. And both of these guides, not in Nora's voice at all, gave us such a lovely, welcoming talk and a little bit of very pure philosophy, which made us feel in complete harmony with them and with each other. And that's so important. This was not a fly-by-night thing. It was not a variety show or something to make you think, oh, it was beautiful. Then, one by one, transfiguring over her face were relatives that belonged to we who were sitting in the congregation. And no one could doubt it. One lady had her father transfigure, Nora, and there was the moustache, and it was one of those not the heavy moustaches that they used to wear in the First World War. Quite neat. The hair was greased down slightly, and he spoke to her. There was no hesitation looking for where and whom he wanted. He spoke to her, and it was a man's voice. Then there was another one who had a little child that came through, and in a child's voice, it spoke to its mother. This was my first experience, and my husband and I didn't have any contact with anyone from the world of spirit then. We were quite pleased to listen and to appreciate the warmth and the love and the reality of what was happening to the others. And you know, it's quite true. The looker on sees most of the game, because you are able to discriminate whether it is enthusiasm or whether it is, I hope it's mine, so they reach out. But these sitters in this house were wise. None of them said, that is my so-and-so, and will you please remember that? They should introduce themselves. And this is so important in any physical demonstration, also in a mental demonstration. We do the introduction, not you in the congregation. I'm sorry, but I'm very dogmatic about that. And then, after the relatives had their party, because some of the relatives that came through, they spoke with different brogues, and some of them were very witty. And you know, it does prove that when you get into the spirit world, you don't become an angelic. They still keep their character, and it's rather charming. And some who had gone quite recently, they were very emotional. But by being able to talk to those they'd left behind, it went. And then my husband, who was a very shy, must be like his wife, a very shy and retired man, but very dedicated and sincere. And he said to me, we were sitting quietly, he turned around to me, he said, how many different faces have you seen over Nora since she stopped, since the relatives have stopped coming? I said, about six, we're talking in whispers. And all the congregation saw six different transfigurations of different guides, different people from the spirit world who wanted to have a little word through the medium to those who were sitting there. And they had no tie of love or relationship with us at all. It was a meeting. And we came away walking on air. And as it was my first experience, of course it's very indelibly deep within my mind, even now. And that was 51 years ago. Laura is now in the spirit world. I don't think they want me. Now, the next one is a very different affair altogether. John Levesque. Anyone here ever heard of him?
Yes.
And he went to Mexico. Yes. He had cancer and he went to Mexico. He worked a lot there. He's back in London now.
I know.
Oh, you'd all have
heard of Christmas.
Anyway, I suppose you wouldn't have met Rose Rook, who used to help run his circles.
No.
But she's still alive, too. She's a great friend of mine. Now, in John Levesque's circle, it was a different type of physical mediumship at all, and it was governed, controlled, and really ruled by his guide, Grey Owl. This is where now, sometimes it could be held in a cabinet, but most often in a chair. And the philosophy that came from that North American Indian, there was gentle music sometimes at the back, light music, not necessarily sanctimonious, rather like Ivan the Willows things, and sometimes a little bit more on the classic side. John was a very loving person, very persecuted to artist mediumship. And in that circle, they would have materialization. The violet would become separate from John, stand completely by his side. Three guides. Now, I know more, I've been told more about this because I've only experienced a little of John's, but I do know there's a lady there who knows something about it anyway. And then they would have wonderful philosophy that would leave them breathtaking. But then they had apples. My friend had one of Grey Owl's feathers on her lap, in a frame. Another lady had a ring in her lap. Someone else had a very old-fashioned French photograph, silver-framed oval, with United Sign of the French Guillotine, those lovely gowns they wore, and there was a picture of a French girl in this photograph. No one knew her, but it came in this lady's lap. Now, do you all know how this happens? Ms. Apples? Well, would you like me to go a little more here? Mind you, I don't know everything. I know a little. One of the guides, or two different circles, the guides explained they don't steal these things from anyone, which somebody said they're pinching someone else's things and dropping them into other people's laps. No, they don't do that. They sometimes discover them lost property. And they dematerialize it. It comes through the air and then rematerializes on a business. And in that circle, when my friend had Grey Owl's feather, it actually happened. It came out of the headdress, it disappeared, and then was on Rose Rook's lap. And it's breathtaking when they see that. Now, there was another, and also in John Vest's circle, you would see columns of light, quite tall sometimes, where materialization had started, but a figure hadn't really appeared, but it was there. And then sometimes you would see a materialization of a little child. Probably nobody knew it, but it was there. And Rose said sometimes they used to sit and hear the most wonderful spiritual talks that we, from a human point of view, would be unable to express with the dedication and the meaning to it. All right, we may voice the same words, but the feeling isn't behind it, and the knowledge isn't behind it. We are quoting what we have heard. And so that went on for a long time. Then he had cancer and he went to Mexico. He did become better and did a lot of work there, but he's back in London now. I don't know if he's working. If you do,
no, he's not working.
Just give him one last thing. Now, the next one that I had a great deal to do with, so I can speak from personal experience, was James Gardner, called very affectionately Jimmy. Anybody here know of him? Thank you. Now, I've seen him many, many times. He wasn't a very strong man. He didn't enjoy the best of health and sometimes walked with a limp. Now, I used to go to a house in Tierney Road, London, Streatham, and he would hold his demonstrations there. One night, I was there, and there were 20 of us sitting in the complete circle. Now, this particular night, James, or Jimmy as I knew him, was, I sat there, he was there, and he was in the cabinet with the light over it, but he didn't have the curtains drawn. And when we first sat in the room, we could see Jimmy sitting in the chair. We saw him go into trance, and yet there wasn't all this heavy breathing and hurling about. It was done quite nicely. And then we saw his principal guide stand behind him quite apart, wasn't over him, he was quite apart from him. On the other side, we saw an Egyptian, an Arab, and behind him, a North American Indian. Now, the light, it was a red light, but we could even see each other. Not if it was clearly, but we could see if anyone made a move, and they didn't. Now, on one occasion, Mr. William Harrison and his wife, Elsie, they were the president of Banner, which has been my church for 50 years. And they lost two children in one day with meningitis. One the aged two and the little girl the aged five. That's what made them become spiritualists. And they were sitting in this particular circle with Jimmy this night. And to Elsie's amazement, Elsie Harrison's amazement, Mavis, her little daughter, sat on her lap. And it was visible. People could see it. The light went just slightly dimmer. But you could see it. And there was a feeling, it's ethereal, that's the only way I could put, around her, so that we couldn't touch her. And yet we knew that she moved. And her hair, she had naturally curly hair, soft and fair. And you could see every tendril of it as she moved her head. And she turned around to her mother and put her arms around her neck. And of course, Elsie's crying. And with joy. And then the little girlie sort of wafted back into the cabinet. But nothing was concealed. Everything was on view. And it was so real. And on that particular night, there was a wonderful demonstration from the Egyptian and talk about ancient Egyptian and how they used to train the novices of the temples to go travelling in their sleep state and bring back the knowledge that they had gained whilst they were asleep, and they were explaining what happened then. And that has happened to me since I was three, and my life was a misery. So it was a relief to know that it was quite really a normal thing to happen. And then, on another occasion, we went to Jimmy's. And again, I was sitting right opposite the cabinet. Not my choice. You know, you just walk in, and if there's a chair vacant, you sit down. And the same guides came, but this time, in front of Jimmy, there was a Sister of Mercy. Now, we'd had a lot of philosophy. I'm telling you the highlights. We'd had a lot of philosophy, a lot of teaching, a lot of laughter. One of his guides was very witty. Handed I don't know whether it was an Irish jig or a Scottish reel, but anyway, he did a dance one night and he sang a song that was befitting what he was doing. Anyway, this particular night, after several of their, many women had their husbands come back that night, and one man who didn't know anything at all about it, I think he was staggered and a bit frightened, because his brother appeared, and they weren't very friendly. But the brother came back and explained things which smoothed out all that difficulty that, when he died, had been still between them. So although man was frightened, he went home feeling walking on the air. And then the next thing was mine. I will never forget it. I wasn't expecting anything. I'll go happily alone with anyone and listen. Because, you know, you get out of life what you're prepared to give. No more, no less. And each one is as important as the other, whether you're on the platform or in the congregation. You remember that. Now, I was sitting opposite this cabinet, and all at once from the cabinet, floating, oh, it was beautiful, was a Sister of Mercy, and I recognized her. She came right in front of me. She was slightly levitated above me, and she said to me, "You know me, don't you?" I said, "Yes." I do. And she brought out a bottle of perfume and she smothered me and the people that were sitting near to me. It was beautiful. And she said, you know my name. I said, yes, I do. I said, but you tell us. And she said, Sister Marguerite, which it was, the first fellow that I was ever given. And, oh, it was so lovely. And with this ecstasy, that's the word that you sort of feel, this spiritual ecstasy is so marvellous that you feel as if you've been literally bathed in healing water, because you begin to realise the depth as well as the heights of the things we are trying to understand. You know? And whilst I'm on that sort of cleansing, that the guides from every circle that I have sat in, a physical circle, have emphasised very much that physical mediumship is the lowest form of mediumship, because it is on the earth, and there is no soul really in it at all. But man needs it. Unfortunately today, you see, if you sit in a physical circle, and I may be teaching grandmothers to suck eggs, and I don't wish to do that, but if you sit in a physical circle for someone to develop, you all, whether you have mediumship talents of your own, you sacrifice those. And the whole of the circle concentrates on that one person whom they feel has this physical mediumship. And it could take from 5 to 10 years before it becomes mature. And yet those people have willingly, Morris Barbanel's wife, now she would have been a wonderful medium, but she sacrificed her mediumship for the benefit of Morris Barbanel's physical mediumship. And it has to be done gladly and willingly. That is why we do not have physical circles now. People don't want to give their talent to somebody else to bring it to the surface. You have to love a person very much to do something like that. Or, better still, love the truth very much. Because it is a sacrifice. But that is how it happens. Anyway, I went again several times to Jimmy Gardner's, and we saw a materialization of a man who had been terribly crippled when he was on the earth. And he showed himself as the cripple, first of all. And he couldn't hold it very long, because now he was perfect. And he stood up with 2 straight legs and said, heaven. Now, I want to tell of something that can really be, I call it the disturbed sign of physical medium meeting. There were about 10 of us, and I had taken 4 people. And there were 2 widows there, and they sat at the foot of the cabinet. The curtains with Jimmy were always open, and you could see anything and everything. One widow sat there, and the other one sat there. Now, before we started, or before the trance had gone very deeply, they kept saying, Jimmy, you will bring my husband, won't you? You have got my John with you today, yes. I sat there with my 2. Anyway, of course, Jimmy was in too deep a trance to be able to answer it, but I was very cross with the person who was running this, because she should have stopped it immediately. But she didn't, and they thought it was wonderful. Now, they had proof of their hope through this before, so why the impatience? It's not a game. And there were others there that needed it far more than them. And when you sit back and think about these things, you know, you can see not only the damage that is done, but the hurt that goes to a person who is truly in need and they don't know much about it, and they're grasping at a straw like a drowning man. And I promised one of my friends, I was so sure of Jimmy's mediumship, I didn't know quite what would happen, but I said, you will get some kind of consolation. Anyway, I have a son in the spirit world who was killed very tragically, and he is a brilliant pianist. And he could play classics and Latin American dance bands, things like that. Anyway, just after these ladies had been clamoring for their husbands, and they addressed one of the guides by his name, I forget it now, here are we sitting in the circle. Over there was a piano with the lid down. And as they're sitting quietly, the talking had stopped, we heard the lid of the piano lift. And someone began to play The Rustle of Spring. And then they went from that to La Composita, and I knew who it was. And these women started again. Jimmy, you are going to bring my John, aren't you? So what happened? Somebody slammed down the lid of the piano, and the whole thing became a fiasco. And that was my son on that piano. He was only 20 when he went. He was electrocuted, working on a faulty transmitter, when he was in the RAF doing his national service. And perhaps you'd like to be told, 2 months before he was killed, I saw him killed. The time, the date, and I couldn't do a thing about it, because I didn't see what he touched. And that's the only thing I have ever, I know I'm diverse, but that's the only thing I've ever had from my family from when I was 3 until now, is premonition of death. And I can well do without that. So when I became a medium, it helped me. Because I knew then why that channel was there. And of course you can bring joy to other people. And that my son works with me. But it was Jeff that was on that piano. And he would be so upset because he was a brilliant pianist. And if someone caused a disturbance whilst he was playing, he would be angry. So he would get impatient, bang the lid down, and that was it. And I thought, typical. It spoiled the whole thing. And they didn't get their husbands. And Dorothy, I forget what her name was, Dorothy Powell, she had to close the circle. Now, I had been in the movement a little while then, and when it was over, I took her quietly aside, because this didn't help Jimmy. When you are in this deep trance, and these things are happening around you, there is a force emanating from the solar plexus that is going around the whole of the room, and even for someone to move a chair sometimes, jolts them, you know, and can cause them to be physically sick. And when this finished and the light came on, he couldn't come out of the trance very easily, and he felt ill and had to go and lie down. She didn't know what had happened. You see, you trust the people who are in charge of you. So when it was over and I took her aside, I said, Dorothy, what's the matter with you? I said, surely when those two women started calling out like that, you should have stopped them. Well, she said, they like their husbands to come. I said, Dorothy, I'm sorry, but you shouldn't be in charge of this kind of thing. I said, if you can't control those that are sitting in the congregation, I said, you couldn't control a wrong person that would be coming through the guide, could you? Because you wouldn't know how to do it. And this is so very important. Sometimes I talk like this during the subject because some of you may have questions that you'd like to ask. And sometimes these little talks do help you. And these things I've lived anyway. But anyway, Jimmy had a word with her afterward. And he did tell her he didn't know why it all went wrong. But he said something was wrong. And he said, I do feel very ill. And he went home and he was ill for 2 days. You see? and it is so very, very risky. But he did come back again, and we had some very successful. One time, one of his guides materialized and walked all around the room with a little civil greeting to everyone that was seated there. Not much, but we all felt in harmony. Yeah? Very beautiful it was. And then I think that's all I can tell you about today. I'll go now to William Olson. Now, this is a very different kind of medium. It's physical mediumship, it's true. But at Balham, he used to come once a month. And Jimmy would have soft music sometimes, or nothing at all. John Levette would have soft music. But William Olson, he relied on singing. Did you know him too?
Yes.
And bless her heart, his wife was a lovely woman, but she said herself that she had a voice like a cornpike. And Elsie Harris and I used to write musicals, and my husband and I used to sing, only as amateurs, please. And when Elsie also had, she used to come in my musicals. And so Mrs. Olson used to say, "Hi, Elsie, will you sing tonight?" So we'd say yes, and he'd come once a month. Now, when he came, there used to be one here, a huge carved Jacobean oak armchair. I think there's one out there somewhere. And it takes a man to really lift them. Now, William would be fully clothed, and he'd be in his chair, no cabinet for William. Always wide open, white light, sometimes a very gentle pink, but he could do it, not quite as brilliant as this, of course. And he would be roped in that chair, tied time and time and time again, round his chest, his arms, his legs, his torso, everything. My husband, a very down-to-earth man, often did the tying. Now, you could stick pins in William Olson. He would feel it. And his guy, he had a Scottish guide, and he used to come and talk to us. We could see him at the back of William, and he would talk in his Scottish brogue. I don't think any of us understood what he was talking about. But we still made him very welcome. And of course, there were those who were very highly educated, like Egyptian. There were two Egyptians, and there was a Turk. And there was also a little boy who was a bundle of fun. And in the middle, this was a complete circle, in the middle was a trumpet and a tambourine. Now, we would sing choruses. If it was Elsie and I, we'd have nice choruses. You know, like I used to sing in the black and white musicals or things like that. We even went back to On the Trail of the Lonesome Pine. As long as we kept the melody flowing. And sometimes the tambourine would come up, not the tambourine, the trumpet. And through that trumpet you would get the direct voice. And oh, so many of those people sitting in that circle would hold a long conversation with their loved ones through the trumpet, and you could, these people couldn't be deceived. The voices were the voices of their families or their loved ones. You could, even we who didn't know them, could distinguish between a child, a man, an ordinary young woman, and an older woman, and somebody my age, I think it was, I don't know. And we knew, and then the names would come. Oh, and there would be such delight and sometimes tears. And it was wonderful how so many misunderstandings were cleared up from the realm of spirit to the living person through little episodes through the trumpet. Now, it used to grieve me a great deal how this tambourine used to get kicked around. I thought, oh dear, what a shame if I can play a tambourine anyway. Had to. Not very well. I heard my mum say that. I'll explain. One night we were there, and we were singing, "She'll be coming round the mountain when she comes." You had to do this. It was William's type of mediumship. And we were singing it quite nicely, and somebody picked up the tambourine, and they played it. I know who that is. Anyway, I went all around, and then somebody began to hum a Hungarian dance tune, and that tambourine kept beautiful time there. And then, as well as the tambourine, a trumpet came up from the floor, and it came to my face. Now, when my mother was on the earth, she was a bit like me. We were gregarious, you know, we like people. And if they came to see her, "Can I borrow your face?" She'd go, "Oh, how lovely to see you." And she'd touch both their cheeks and give them a kiss. I'm not going to give you a kiss. I'll give you a kiss. And this trumpet did exactly that to me. She said, Oh, Ivy. "You know who's playing, who's here, don't you?" I said, "Yes, I do, darling, but you tell the others." "Well," she said, "I'm Carrie, I'm your mum." And the tambourine went down on the floor. She said, "Did you know it was me playing the tambourine?" I said, "Yes." Now, my mother used to be in the Joy Strings in the Salvation Army, and she had every one of us can play and sing, and she had a wonderful voice, and she loved it. And of course, when she went, I kept her tambourine, and with my gypsy shows, I used it as a gypsy, took the the Salvation Army ribbons off and put their ones on. Lovely coloured ones on. I couldn't play it like my mother, but it was fine. And what my mother did that night with that tambourine was wonderful. And Mrs. Olsen said, "Nobody's ever played tambourine before." And this was even before my mother touched my face. So she said, "I can't understand it, isn't it lovely?" And it went on for four quarters of an hour. And she would go from Hungarian music, whatever anyone liked to sing, she would accompany it. And because she could dance too, so could I. And then the tambourine went down and she started talking to me. She said, "Thank you for the roses, Ivy." She said, "They're lovely." Now, my mother had been gone some time, and in my garden, there were three tea roses, which my bigger bridesmaids carried on my wedding day, and my mother made the costumes and the bouquets. So I picked these three tea roses, took them down to my sister's, and put them near my mum's photograph on the mantelpiece. I've never done anything like that before. She said, "Thank you for the roses. They were two roses. Weren't they lovely?" She said, "I did enjoy them." I said, "What did it remind you of?" She said, "Oh, your wedding day." I mean, I was a mum then, some time ago. And then she talked about different members of the family. And I said to her, "You haven't forgotten your music, have you?" "Oh, no," she said. "It's better now than ever it was." So then she said, "Tell Geoffrey, I'll take care of him." And there was a sort of sad note in it, but Geoff was still there. So I said, "Yes, darling, I will." She said, "Don't worry, I'll look after him." I said, "Oh, good." Now, he'd just gone in the RAF, his national service, when this happened. And I said, "Well, why? Why are you saying this? I just want you to know that I'll look after him. You see?" And then she said, "I must go now because I'm taking up too much time." And she blew us all a kiss through this trumpet. It's the kind of thing I'd do anyway. And then it went down again and that tambourine wasn't touched again. Then, or in any of the succeeding meetings that William had, it was kicked about or might be picked up and banged and put down again. But 6 months after that, my Jeffrey was killed. So she must have known, you see. And I realised what she was talking about. Now, the next time when we went to William Morrison was a very different night altogether. We'd got columns of light in that corner, in all four corners. There was the complete circle again with William's chair over by the door like that gentleman sitting there, this huge Jacobean oak carver, and with William tied in it with these heavy ropes. And the guide was talking, and then, to our horror, we had levitation. I said horror. They lifted William Olson, chair and all, over the head of all of us and dumped it in that corner. If it had fallen on one of us, we'd been killed. And of course, we all were going and praying it would stay up, I expect. But it was done so smoothly and really quite swiftly that we weren't. Didn't have time to be really frightened. We were amazed, put it that way. And I thought, my gosh, now it's got to go back. I'm not psychic for nothing. And they did. They lifted up the chair and much more slowly bore it over our heads and put it very gently. I keep looking at that gentleman as if he's Will Olson. Very gently put it down in the corner. Nothing was disturbed, nothing was hurt, but we'd never seen that done before. And when the light, oh, there was a lot more from the trumpet. Oh, and one man came back, and there was a pack of cards coming out of the trumpet. He used to be a card cheat. Only at home. He always had six or seven aces. But he would play his game. And he wanted to prove that he could still do it. But you know, this is so funny. I'm veering off a little again. One man came through once when I was demonstrating. He said that he had lots of game of cards. When he got into the spirit world, he was so annoyed he couldn't play because everybody could see what he was holding. And then he went on and said, but I've learned something. He said, over here, it's a mental world. So he said, I put a blockage up now and I can see. You see, we say things very flippantly sometimes. But if you stop and think, it is a mental world. And they can adapt. And if they've got the adroitness here to be a little bit clever, they don't lose that when they get on the other side. Mind you, it becomes a little more refined. And you see, this is what happened with William Olson. These things happened. Now, when the light went up, the night that the chair had been levitated, all the ropes were still on William Olson, but his coat was off, his waistcoat was off. I think they remembered their manners, they didn't know anymore. They were all nailed very precisely at his feet, holding up. He didn't know a thing, yet those ropes were still there. How could you doubt something that you see like that? I know very well they say it is of the earth, earthy, but to any of you, wouldn't it be a revelation? And I'm so privileged and so proud to have shared these things with these wonderful mediums. You know, our pioneers who did that kind of thing, they went to prison for us. And we enjoy luxury with our psychic powers and sit here in harmony, and nobody's going to arrest the medium, so we should make the most of it. And now I'm just going to tell you one little one. Leslie Flint. I had I was running a circle at home, I don't know when I hadn't been, but in this circle sat Mrs. Rose Briggs, the mother of Johnny Briggs in Coronation Street. And she sat in my circle for many years. And Johnny had just come out of his session in the army, and he was 21. And he had a sister, Christine. He'd only been out of the army, and they were holding a 21st birthday party for him. Christine had just been apprenticed to a West End hairdresser's, and she was asked to take something down the iron staircase at the back to put in the dust bag that was there, and she slipped and she hit the back of her head on two of the iron stairs at the bottom. Well, it did shake her up, and they sent her home by taxi. And she wanted to be well for Johnny's party in the evening, so she lay down and rested. Anyway, her mother went up and she said, "Are you coming down, Christine?" And she said, "No, Mummy, I don't feel well enough. Tell Johnny to enjoy his party." Well, the party went on. By the way, he was very and a very nice man. Anyway, during the lull in the party, they heard a crash upstairs and they ran up. And Christine must have been trying to attract their attention because she'd taken hold of an alarm clock that stood on the table by the side of her, and to attract them, she had flung it to the door. When they got up there, she was dead. Through the door. And Johnny neither went mad because they adored each other, so did her parents. Anyway, it was through that that I'd taken Rosie Briggs to Leslie Flint's. Christine had been gone, oh, I suppose about 4 months. Now there were, I think there were eight of us there. My husband had a man that he used to work with who was crushed between shunting wagons, and he talked to Jim. And then there was a density, a quietude, because this is direct voice. You don't see anything. They speak to you as if they are in the room, well, they are in the room with you. And then all at once, there was this young girl's voice, and she saying, "Mummy, Mummy." And of course, Rose was choked, and she couldn't get the answer out. So I touched Rose's hand, and I said, and then the girl said, "Mummy, it's Christine, Christine." And she got stronger, so then Rose was able to answer her. And she said, "Please tell Johnny, I'm so sorry, I couldn't go to his birthday party, I did want to." And Rose said, "Christine, we do miss you so much." She said, "Are you happy?" "Yes," she said, "I've got Wiki with me." I thought, "Wiki? What is that?" So Rose said, "Have you?" And she said, "Yes." And somebody said, "Oh," Rose said to her, "you tell them all about Wiki." And Christine's voice said, "Well, it's my black and white doggy." She said, "And I couldn't say whiskey, so we always called him Wiki." And Wiki was there to meet her when she went into the spirit world. But she said, "Tell Johnny that he will go from strength to strength." And then she said to her mummy, she said, "Mummy, do be careful." She said, "Please take care of yourself." She said, "Don't write things." And nobody knew what she was talking about. But anyway, it was really lovely. But some of the sitters there, because Christie's evidence took so much time, they were angry. They felt it was a waste of their time and money, you see. And they said, "Oh." I turned round very quietly. I said, "Christine's only been gone 4 months." I said, "She was an only daughter." I said, "She has a brother." I said, "And they were devastated. They're a very loving family." I said, "And she died under such tragic circumstances." I think they were a little more understanding then, but I think they did feel that the money was wasted. But you see, God knows where the need is greatest. So do the guides. And that little girlie needed to, and she sent such a lot of love to Johnny. Well, she said to Johnny, don't write things. Some while afterward, her daddy bought her mummy, I'm not very up in, is there such a motorcycle, a Lambretta or something?
Yes. Yes.
Honeymoons. He bought her this Lambretta, took her in the car to pick it up. She could already ride, she was quite accomplished, and he drove the car back home and she followed on the Lambretta. And a lorry came out of the turning, knocked her down and dragged her for yards and yards and yards. She lost part of her brain, still lived. She couldn't speak, she couldn't walk. And that's what Christine meant. But you see, even with a close contact like that, they are not allowed to make it so clear that we avoid these things. We have to experience it. Well, friends, I hope you enjoyed this, but I want to tell you this. I look upon our work as jewels. To me, we have a sanctuary within us, and within that sanctuary, we hold the jewels. To me, the diamond represents truth because it has many facets, and we have to remember, however loyal and staunch a spiritualist we are only a facet of the truth. We are not whole truth. And everyone on this earth walks toward utter and perfect perfection in their own way. We haven't the right. I can't be anything else but a spiritualist. But I haven't the right to say to somebody else, I'm a spiritualist, so should you be. No. The diamond for truth, the ruby for love, because spiritualism revolves around love. God is love. Everything he grants to us is an expression of his love. We find we have a gift. We love it. We love the guides that work with us, not worship them, love them. We love the people we're talking to. What brings you to a spiritualist church? Love of someone you've lost. What brings them to you? Love for you. So you have the ruby. But with it, we have the pearl of wisdom to handle everything we know with wisdom. May I quote from I wrote a poem once in gratitude because I love my work. I think we're very privileged. And I think, too, that they have a lot of patience with us. And I was going through a rough time. And I love nature, anyway. I was shocking. You don't need to sit in a quiet room to meditate. You can walk along where the pneumatic drill is going, and you can just start counting your blessings. And you lift immediately. And you get help. And I've proved that. And I was walking along in the spring, and a bird was singing its heart out on a tree. The tree looks like soft green lace, you know. And I felt this upsurging of understanding and strength and awareness. So I wrote a poem of gratitude. Spirit of light, walk with me. Stay a while and talk with me. For when your wisdom you expound, the paving stones become holy ground. Tell me of love as you really know it. Help me to learn. Teach me to show it from day to day in kindly service to people to whom this world seems loveless. Show me the rarest beauty, the simple meaning of love and duty. For as I see wisdom through thy clear eyes, to be most simple is to be most wise. The psychic gifts serve a goodly purpose, but all they do would be utterly worthless if, in receiving a message or glorying to give it, I forget life itself and how to live it.
speak like that. I wish you could come and speak to us at every seminar that we hold. I know you can't get around the country.
I'd like to give you all a little hint, may I?
You certainly may.
Now, if you really love something, you'll speak. You'll overcome your shyness, because what you love is stronger than that. I know some, I mean, my tongue goes 19 to the dozen, and I know it may not come as glibly as mine, but love will conquer everything. You may only have to say a few sentences, but say it as if you really mean it, and that's the secret. You mean it.
I wondered what it was. Had these experiences, they live in the memory. I know some of you have got tears in your eyes, and I've quite choked myself. When I was listening to it, brought back all my experiences that I've had. And I've only had a fraction of those. Why do I be here? Are there any questions you'd like to ask?
Well, I want you.
Anybody with a question, and I'm sure there must be loads.
And I won't guarantee I know it all.
Of course, you know, dance like more than anybody else. Anybody got a question?
What questions can you ask after the speech?
I don't know. Yes, his name's got one of the
I know he's got a lot of time to develop physical mediumship, but I wonder, Ivy, whether there are exceptions. Because I have a friend who's sitting in my circle, and she got a materialization. Got everything very quick. Now she's three, and her brother died at birth. Mm-hmm. And she thinks that it's probably something to do with that. Have you ever heard of that sort of thing?
No, but we live and learn.
Yes.
And another thing when we are working, use your common sense. Don't be fanatical. Please, I hate it. Truth doesn't need to be gilded. Not at all. But I would think that he would give her a greater sense of what she is experiencing, but there would be a more highly evolved soul working through her.
More knowledge.
But there might be double strength because he would be interested in what she was doing. You see, now, am I overstepping? I'd like to, if you don't mind, tell you how I first started and I wanted to become a medium. As a child, I give lectures all over the place on my pathway to mediumship. I did it down here with Robin Stevens last year with the International Spiritualists. And from when I was three until I, or after I started work, the experiences I had before I was a spiritualist and the experiences I had after them. But you see, I started very young getting these things, and my childhood was a misery. People used to say, she's got too vivid an imagination. She's telling lies. And I must give you my first experience. I used to get horrible nightmares. I dreaded going to bed. I used to wake in my sleep. I was a pest. But the first real impact that made me sit up and take notice was when the First World War started. My dad went to the First World War, bless his heart. He went from Salisbury Plain with a rifle that didn't fire. Anyway, that's beside the point. And I had an uncle Sid out there, Uncle Frank, and my father. And the war had been on, I suppose, about 3 months. And I was playing in the playground. And suddenly I stopped. I said, oh dear. My uncle Sid's been wounded and taken prisoner of war. And then I sort of shook myself and went on playing. But of course the grapevine went round the school and it reached my headmistress. And she sent for my teacher, who was a firm friend of my uncle Sidney's fiancé. So she said to my teacher, do give Hilda my condolences about Sid being wounded and taken prisoner. So my teacher said, That's not true. She said she had a field card from him this morning. He's coming home on leave next week. So I was brought out in front of all school. Standing in front of them, I was berated for telling lies. And I was demoted. I'd rather have had a flogging. I knew that. It was terrible. I was demoted from standard 5 to standard 1 for a whole day. It was terrible because I loved school. And unfortunately, I spent a lot of time in hospital, so I just had to miss a lot. And, oh, I felt something related. Anyway, they said I told lies and this, that, and the other. But Uncle Sid didn't come home on leave next week. And Auntie Hilda, that was to be, she had a telegram saying that on that very day, his ankles had been run over by an ammunition wagon. They were wagons and horses in the First World War. And he was a prisoner of war. Now, you would have thought they'd have said sorry, wouldn't you? Well, they didn't. My head mistress, in front of all of them, said, don't listen to Ivy Hazzard, she romances. That was it.
Yeah.
But all this, it happened for years, and in my lecture I'll explain how these premonitions, which was the gracious faculty that was working, saved my life and my family's life. I can't forget it, it takes too long. And it takes about an hour. I could be like the other mediums and write a book, but everybody's writing a book and I'd rather share it because you get the poignancy and the reality of it. But when I first started work at Bauer, oh, this was wonderful. I'd only been a spiritualist 6 months, and Bill Harrison said to me, I'll hear you can take the Sunday service tomorrow. Oh, Bill, I said, I can't do that. He said, oh, yes, you can. I said, well, the clairvoyance I'm not responsible for, and I do guess it. So that wasn't sort of the worry. But it was the philosophy. I mean, that's a great responsibility. And I thought, how do I do it now? In those days, I cleaned a grate with blacklead. And I was cleaning a grate with blacklead. And I'm thinking, what do I talk about? And my brain was very active. All these ideas kept coming in, and I said, no, it has to have a beginning and an ending, and it has to be tidy, otherwise I won't do it. And then I heard a lovely voice say, one small ship on life's boundless sea, cresting its joys and braving adversity, manned, it seems, by one personality. But no. A mighty crew has she, my faith, God's hope, and my neighbour's charity. And I gave the address on the old subject in Corinthians, faith, hope, and charity. And I likened the three things to three gifts. Faith, our gift to God, hope, his gift to us, and charity, our gift to each other. And I finished it with that small part.
Well, I don't know why I see this telegram over your head, but maybe. my third eye's gone bloodshot, Amy, I'm sorry. Anyone else got a question? Yes, Mary.
Did the medium say her maiden name was?
Pardon?
What was your maiden name?
Did you say Hazzard?
Ivy Lillian Hazzard, 2 Z's.
Watch out, dangerous.
Say the John Lovett's guide, bless your heart, is great feather. And when he last wrote to me, he was saying that he's collating his memoirs.
Yes.
I don't know how far along it is because I haven't seen him lately, just heard from him. But there should be a book.
Oh, yes.
About these
Well, Rose Rook, who was his secretary and his foreign friend, she would know.
Yes.
And do you know where she lives?
I don't know where she lives.
If you write to Ballon Church, you know Ballon Church?
Yes, well.
211 Ballon High Road.
I know.
If you want to find out anything about John Levitt, write to Rose Rook, care of Ballon Spiritualist Church, and you will get an answer.
Thank
you. I've got a question for
you. How is it you stay so young and so vigorous and so
well? Now, I am serious. I had 56 years good marriage. We did everything together. My husband was a healer. When he came to London, he couldn't dance, so I taught him. Because we loved dancing. We could both sing. All my family could sing. We were very united. Then we had two sons, one who was still alive and the other one we lost. And my son had four children, girl boy, girl boy. And I had nearly nine great grandchildren. And they phoned me up. I'm a grandfather. It's lovely. But the thing is, I love my work. As I said, we've never had a lot of money. I don't even own my house, and I certainly haven't got a car. It doesn't matter. I could have travelled the world and been very wealthy with this, but I wouldn't leave my husband. I couldn't. I don't care how strong the mediumship was, and there's plenty of money in England for our mediumship. And when the Americans come to me, some of them, but all they are so different. It's what is their business doing and all that kind of thing. But there's plenty of work in England for all of us. That doesn't mean to say we shouldn't spread the knowledge in other countries. Yes, by all means, if that's what they want. And I have great mediums going all over the world. Bless their hearts, they must get worn out sometimes. But I think it is that simple things. I don't want grandeur. Do you know, I went to a meeting once and I felt so embarrassed. They stood up and they said, I just got the famous medium from London. When I stood up, I said, I'm sorry, I'm not famous, but I said, I'm well known and I think I'm loved. I said, and that's better than fame. Much better.
Gentlemen, I think 90 years old is marvellous. I think she's done very well today. And thank you so much for coming along. Believe me, I've learned a great deal. I shan't get up to speak now for another 25 minutes. That's right. It has been marvellous. Show you, and particularly to the young people here today, well, younger than me, I mean.
That's all
of us. There's some people here, isn't there? Young people today, if you can have these experiences, and you will, because as the Noah's Ark Society grows, physical mediumship returns, you are going to be the people of the future, are going to stand here and speak to others. Be able to speak with conviction. It is so important because it really conveys this to anyone. That one, as you saw with Ivy, she lives the experiences. They're as fresh today as when they happened 50 years ago. It never goes out of your mind. And I know many of you here have had these experiences. Many are going to have these experiences. You carry it with you. You'll become the pioneers of the future. You'll take spiritualism into the next century. And it'll be wonderful because of the work that people like Ivy and others have done. Let's give her another big hand.